So, Amber, are you on?
I'm here.
Great. Connie?
Present.
Lucia? Okay. Beau will not be joining us. Joyce?
This is Lori. I'm here for Joyce. She should be joining us in just a moment.
Great. Renee? Rudy?
Here.
Great. Sheila? And then Michael?
I'm here. And just an FYI, I will have to jump off at 9:30 for another meeting.
Okay. And then it's still kind of unclear to me from your end who's going to be joining us.
I think I'm the only one.
That was my thought. I know Jed and Vicky are copied on everything. So I guess if they're on, if they just announce themselves, will probably work, but they're not.
I know Vicky is dealing with an unfortunate plumbing situation at her home.
Oh, no.
So I'm pretty sure she won't be, and I don't know of Jed, though.
Okay. So I guess could you just clarify for us who you guys want from your side to be, like, regular attendees? I mean, obviously anyone can listen in.
I think you've got the right people on the email.
Okay.
With Jed, Vicky,
just
and Michael.
Copying them, and if they come, they come, and if not. Okay. Fran? She's going to jump on. And Elena? Not sure either. Okay. Well, we will get started then. First up is the review of the exceptions for the voter service center. We went ahead and presented the model to the commission of the regular process. I don't have a draft yet of this one. Somehow Cynthia and I had a disconnect on that. And what I did want us to do, though, is then to start again and just take a step back and review what all we want to make sure gets included on the exceptions. I think the first one, if we could start with, is provisionals. And what I'd like us to do is discuss what are the reasons why, with same-day registration and everything, we would give someone a provisional so that we can also make that clear to counties and to the board what are the expectations around provisionals. So I don't know who wants to start. I mean, obviously the first one is, you know, if they're not actually a resident.
Yeah, this is Michael. I think the one, you're right, not a resident. The big one to me is that they don't have ID.
No ID. And then there's some exceptions around that, we'll come back to that one too, because we had talked about that a little bit more. I think some of it also depends on what day, right? The options, if it's earlier in the process or before 7 o'clock on election day, what their options are around that. ID is definitely one and not a resident. Others, what are other reasons why someone would be issued a provisional?
This is Michael again. I believe you would get a provisional if, like, it shows that you've returned your mail ballot, but you claim that you haven't.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mail ballot. Returned. Great. So we had a couple other people join us. Do you guys just want to announce yourselves?
Hi, this is Renee from Delta. Sorry, I'm a few minutes late.
Oh, great. Glad you could join us, Renee.
You bet. Thanks.
I think we had a couple other click-ons here, not just this minute, but a little bit before. I was going to give everybody that chance to click and link before pausing.
Hi, this is Elena Nunez with Common Cause. I just joined.
Great. Hi, Elena. We're just talking about what are the reasons why someone would get a provisional, not a resident, no ID, mail showing as returned, voter saying they haven't voted.
From Wells County.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say if they're voting in the wrong county or the wrong state.
right, voting in wrong county and, yeah, and haven't moved. So that's okay. Not a resident in the county as well as state then.
This is Amber. If they're on a canceled status for deceased or felon or whatever.
So, okay, let's cancel status with deceased. I'm trying to take some notes as well. So, felon. Cancel status, deceased, felon. If they're on a canceled status and they're not showing as deceased, could they register, re-register with same-day registration?
Yeah, I would say so, as long as they weren't canceled for deceased or, well, felon, I mean.
Felon, they probably couldn't. I mean, would you give them a provisional or not if there was a question as to their eligibility?
You'd probably do a provisional and then also the canceled for not a citizen if they have previously indicated that they were not. I don't know how that would. I mean, if they were indicating now that they are, I think that would be a policy question for the state as to if it's a provisional or if it's just a new document. If they're now indicating citizenship,
right? So. If they have, and then that's interesting. Then with provisional, if they vote provisional, I don't know if there's any process around how you verify or correct any of that information if that's in law either.
And that question exists in the current model as
well. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not new. It's just same-day registration may cure some of that.
Right. It's just a matter of how it's handled from a process perspective.
Yeah, okay. So this will be a good one for us to kind of continue to explore. Come back to that one. Or, you know, what do we need to do around that one going forward? The other reason I had down was also if you can't verify in score, either, you know, if score were to be down, I mean, that would be a lot of provisional. So that probably slightly falls more into the contingency planning end of things. So recap again, not a resident in county or state, mail showing as returned. I think the other would be, or they've showed they've already voted, be that mail or be that, still don't know if we've aligned on what we call it, but if they, you know, early voted in person or it appears they've early voted in person, that would be the same thing. And then canceled status is what we just went over a bit. Other reasons that we've thought of? Okay,
Good morning, this is Sheila. Sorry, I'm late. I thought it was 9:30.
Oh, you know what? As soon as you said that, this one's 9. This one's 9. Sorry, I apologize. I think when we were holding it on Thursday, it had to be at 9:30, but we're trying to keep them scheduled at the same time to avoid that, but there was a meeting already in that room, so that was the confusion. I apologize for that.
And here I am on the phone now, too.
Oh, good. Sorry about that.
Sorry, Cynthia.
Thanks, Cynthia. Yeah, I was just going over, and I apologize. I was telling him that I had a disconnect with you last week, so we'll just keep going forward. Right now, we're just reviewing reasons for the provisional so that we can kind of work up for the commission, you know, what are the reasons and other counties to create the tool for why provisionals would be issued. I think the two that need further discussion are canceled status. So the questions that I have on that and that we've raised are with a non-citizen, if they are presenting documentation stating they are a citizen, what do you do? And then the other, if they're just regularly canceled because of, you know, their registration has timed out. Do you just re-register them? Which I would think the answer to that would be yes. If there's no other, you know, one of the other reasons someone gets canceled for, like non-citizen being deceased or being a felon. What are your guys' thoughts on that if they're just canceled? You know, because
the scenario is they're canceled non-citizen?
No, I think those are the ones we need to discuss more. I'm going to start with what I think is the easy one, which is if they're just canceled, which would be to not due to not voting. And they with same-day registration, there is a process in law where if they show they've still been in residence for, you know, the 6 years, you can reinstate them. I would say with same-day registration that they just re-register. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
This is Rudy from Weld County. I agree with you, Hillary. I would go ahead and use same-day registration to re-register them so they could vote.
Yeah, and so that's the easy one. There's no other reason other than just not voting. It's, you know, timing out through the process. The
or
other
the voter
three,
withdrawing.
Sorry, Renee?
The voter withdrawing as well. They would just
withdrawing.
Need to register.
Yep.
Hillary, do we have no ID on the list of why we would give provisional?
Yeah, we do. And we're going to come up, that's another one for us to discuss a bit more is all around the options around no ID, because we talked a little bit about it last time. I just want to recapture it so we're sure we get that in our material. But first we're going to start with canceled, and then we'll move on to no ID.
Okay.
So deceased, what other reasons are you canceled that's not deceased, felon, or non-citizen? We have you timed out or you canceled your registration yourself. Is there any other reason that you'd be canceled that's not one of those other three?
Is there a withdrawn?
Withdrawn, yeah. I have that. I don't think there is. Is there?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Okay, so that one's pretty easy. If it's either voter initiated and they've withdrawn or non-action, meaning they just haven't voted, we would just reinstate them with the same day voter registration. Pretty good on that one? Okay. Now let's go to deceased. If we have someone who's canceled for being deceased and they show up and are trying to register, what would you do?
This is Michael. I mean, if they have ID and they are in front of you, I think you would let them re-register.
That's what I would think. And would you create a new registration, or would you reinstate the registration?
I would think you would reinstate and acknowledge someone's error.
And then how would you confirm that it's the same person?
We could check the CDPHE search function and just see if there was a error in something, you know, date of birth or last four, something that we...
How long does that stay on the record, though? I mean, like, how far back can you search?
It's out there. I see stuff where people have been canceled or deceased for several years, I think.
And I think the way you would identify it's the same person is you'd have to have minimum matching criteria.
There you go.
To reinstate. If you didn't have minimum matching criteria, then it would be a new registration. Is that right?
That's what I would think. And I guess it's one of those. And then I guess it would matter if they wanted to show their voting record for
a
period of time. But if you didn't have, and then minimum matching, how would you, you know, would you just ask them for that? Because, you know, don't want to give them the answers, right?
Yeah, I mean, in ideal world, they're giving you their driver's license, and you'll have enough there. But you're right, you may have to ask for it.
Okay.
Hillary?
Yeah?
I just looked at my father-in-law, and he passed away in 2003, and he showed up.
Oh, okay. So that's a good one to first check the CH. That's another way.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you guys think we want to recommend? I mean, imagine, you know, you're in a service center and someone comes in. Let's do election day, because that's probably going to be the most stressful. You have a little more time, perhaps, on some of those other days. So it's election day. Someone is deceased. someone shows, you do a search on their name and they come up as deceased, or they insist they're already registered and you find them and it shows that they've been canceled because they're deceased, obviously you're going to check to see if it was, you know, a data entry error, and the way you would do that is, would you search the CDHP Public Health?
Well, this is Connie from Morgan, and personally, I would prefer just having those as a provisional so we would have ample opportunity to make sure that everything had been fixed back to normal if they indeed were really had not passed away, and it'd give us time to investigate that, and because that one seems to be kind of serious, but that's my own personal opinion.
I think my only concern is that same-day registration allows them to register and vote a regular ballot.
This is Cynthia. I think we had this happen one year, and it was very clear once we looked at it that we had done it in error. So I think they called our office and we checked and it was like, oh, yeah, we definitely made the mistake when we canceled them. We picked the wrong vote.
Yeah, and this is Amber. I think we've had maybe one instance of this, but this would probably be a circumstance where I would prefer the supervisor to call into our hotline and sort of maybe verify through the voter registration department, because we have sort of specialists that take those types of calls. So I'd probably prefer maybe a call to the office to just be sure, as you know, and maybe that's instead of a provisional, just sort of. Since it is sort of a special exception, it likely won't happen very often kind of thing, maybe it would make sense to have folks call into the main office.
Yeah, Amber, I think that's a good alternative. I think I would like that. I think that would work.
And then, you know, what is it, do you think it, I mean, would it be helpful for our group to help align on, you know, a best practice around how would you research this? So they call in and then what? What would you guys do next? Would you search the CDC, I can't remember the right initials, the database for it, public health database, or would you, you know, you ask them for minimum matching? What do you do?
We would likely, this is Amber, we would likely look at the CDPHE database and then probably other documents that we had on file for the particular voter, look at voting history, I mean, probably do a thorough review of the voter record to kind of see, because if they haven't voted in, like, you know, 10 years and they're all of a sudden popping up and, you know, then that would probably maybe raise a red flag. But I think there is just a thorough review of the record to be sure it's handled correctly and a check of the driver's license number and maybe previous documents or something like that would make sense.
And would that be only if they insist that they're that voter? Because what if it's just, you know, what if they have the same name? You know what I mean? Like, so imagine you're in the center and you the first filter is going to be, oh, this looks like that we have you as deceased. Would you then first check minimum matching to see if it actually is the same voter? And then if not, re-register them? Because it seems like there needs to be – so is this the process once you've determined that it's the same voter, and then are you using minimum matching to make that determination? Because otherwise it seems like you would just register them as a new voter.
If we made the mistake, I think we'd want to reinstate them so they keep all of their voter history and affiliation.
Right. I guess I'm just, you know, trying to recommend, you know, think through the process. So someone comes in, and I guess that's the first step to double check that they hand you their ID, you look them up. And in the lookup, you pull up someone where this person appears to be canceled because they're deceased, right? But obviously, you have someone with that name, with ID in front of you.
who either needs to be registered or we've made a mistake on their record. So what's the check that you do to make that determination? Would you look at minimum?
Thinking about it, if you're doing a search on a voter, you're mm-hmm. searching active and inactive. You're probably not searching canceled because it doesn't default to that.
That's a good point. So they wouldn't come up. So they wouldn't come up, and you would then say, oh, well, we'll register them. The only way this would come up is if they insisted they were already registered.
Correct.
That's an interesting point.
Joyce and Chafee, and I just have a question, and maybe I'm not up to par yet. But when you put someone's name in and you do a search on them, can't we go into our cancel file as well? Because if we had them as deceased, so to speak, and they're in the cancel file, can't we just reinstate them at that point?
Well, I think that's we're sorting through under what circumstances would you reinstate them and how would you know?
Well, if they have all the minimum criteria and they're kind of like standing right there and you know that that's that person, you wouldn't really re-register them, kind of reinstate them at that point?
You might. That's kind of what we're sorting through. It's like, under what circumstances would you? And that's exactly what we're kind of trying to determine. But the new wrinkle is when someone comes in. So it started with, again, the bigger conversation, when would you issue a provisional? This might be one of those circumstances. But now when you go to search for it, they're canceled on how we're currently using it. A canceled record wouldn't come up, right? Because that's not, I mean, you could go in and search canceled, but would you? I mean, would you just search active and inactive, and if they didn't come up, register them as a new voter? Because if they're standing before you with valid ID, I don't know, but this is also one of those that...
I think we would strain our judgment. To look to canceled next after
guess,
they can't.
Yeah, I guess it would kind of be like the circumstance if that voter would say to you, I voted in the last election.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
yeah, or I'm already registered. Then you'd go to canceled.
And then
right.
then at that point, I would think then you would go into the canceled file and look for that voter. If they're not in the active and the inactive and they're standing there saying, well, you know, I voted in 2012
mm-hmm.
general election, then
right.
I think at that point, then you would go into the canceled file, and then that's probably where you would find him or her.
Right. So does everybody align with that? That the way that this issue would come up is because the voter would insist that they were already registered.
Yeah, but I think I would into just automatically look to the canceled if you can't find someone, no matter whether they were registered or not, just to make sure you don't create two records.
Yeah, and this is Amber. We actually have trained previously that if they don't find them when they were in early voting, to search in the canceled. So.
Right, and that was because we had people, that's because you couldn't register, right? But now with people, you know, do you ask them, are you registering for the first time here in Colorado? Right? I mean, do you put that as part of the process in order to get to this?
Yeah, and I would just, I mean, I think, and they may know and they may not know, because
mm-hmm.
a lot of people get confused, like when they register their motor vehicle.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily realize they've, you know, done both. So that'd be the only thing I think I'd maybe worry about is relying on what they know to be true.
Right. Right.
Just because of some of the other processes. So
then to, you know, to Sheila and what Joyce I think I heard saying was, so do we look to have more programs so that it searches active, inactive, and canceled right from the start? And if so, what does that do to the bandwidth? I mean, the good news is we've merged a bunch of that, but the other part of that is there's a lot of canceled records out there. And what's going to be the impact of that on searching?
Well, this is Connie, and I don't know. I just think that we don't would not need to pull up immediately the canceled. We just need to have that available. But because your point is the bandwidth may be affected, and we certainly don't want that to be added in. And as someone pointed out, there's so very few of those that that wouldn't be a necessary thing to have, unless you know you can go out there and you can search for those canceled records. So just leave it as to active and inactive.
Right, and then when you do voter merge after the election, that's when you could join that record back together if it you know there weren't any issues. The only thing with that is, what if you go to merge them, you notice it after the election that they'd had a canceled deceased record out there. Then what do you do?
Yeah, I think this is Rudy from Well County. I think this goes back to Amber's point. If that situation came up at a service center, we would have them call our phone bank, and the phone bank would have to search through the canceled record, so that way there wouldn't be a duplicate record initiated in the score. And then the phone bank would give, I guess, instructions on pulling up the voter ID of the canceled person, so that way they can re-register the voter if we indeed canceled them in error.
Right, and all of that's true. The big difference is the impact of same-day registration, right? Because before we had people come in and they would insist that they'd already registered, and so then if you couldn't find them, you would search canceled records. Now we're not, now with same day, that is removed. So that's where you kind of go, I mean, that changes the presumptions that you're making. And when someone comes in and they may or may not have already been registered, you know, then that brings up, if we train everyone to search canceled as well as inactive and active, what does that do to the system? What's the impact? What is that, you know, what does it add to the system? And then what does it cost the system in order to do that? Or do you just let the same situation come up where someone insists they're already registered?
Well, I think for this year it's no impact because we're all full Citrix connections. But it may change next year if they get the web interface built.
Well, I think the difference this year is currently when you search an early voting module, it's not searching canceled records. And there, I mean, we've merged them so there's less, but there's a lot of canceled records out there. So,
but the way you've got it set up, you're checking in at a registration table first. Because there's that rule out there, the Secretary of State put out a rule that you have one station with registration and one station with early voting module, right?
So it's not about the module, it's that they're both pinging the same database.
Okay.
That's the concern. That's what I'm trying to have us think through. I don't know if it's a concern, but it's definitely, you know, you went from searching active and inactive records on a statewide basis during early voting to now you're searching active. Again, I don't know if it's going to be as big of an issue for this year's election, but going forward, what does, one, do we want to suggest that canceled is part of the process from the very beginning? If we do, what's the impact of that? Or do you search canceled like we currently have been doing, which is when someone insists they're already registered to vote?
I think the second.
So the one risk with the second is you, and I don't know if it's a risk, so let's just think through this one. So you have somebody who comes in, you don't find them in active or inactive status, you register them to vote, they vote, they have the proper right, they meet the qualifications for a new registrant. Then after the election, right, we'll turn back on voter merge, we'll pull up records, and this is where I'm making an assumption that it will look at canceled records as well still. And it pulls up a canceled record that's canceled because they either haven't voted or they withdrew. That one's no problem, right? You just merge the record and now they have the full voter history for that voter. Good to go. The next one you pull up and it shows their canceled record was canceled because they were deceased. So obviously the first thing you're going to do is check minimum matching and see if it really is the same person. Then what
then if it is, what do you do if it looks like it's the same person? Seems like the next step is you would check the CDHP database, right? Make sure there wasn't a data entry error. Then if it still looks like the same person, then what?
Yes. I suppose you would just complete the merge.
Or, you know, that's the downside of if you don't look at canceled, then there's going to be the three exceptions we just talked about where you may issue them a provisional could come up, right?
But
the other one is if they're a felon or if they were canceled for a non-citizen.
Yeah.
And if I'm missing something, I'm you know, just trying to explore the conversation with you guys.
Well, I think it wouldn't happen very often, but it seems like if it was happening, it'd be safer to have somebody look at that canceled record if they can. I mean, that's the preference. In reality, it's probably going to happen in a number of ways, you know?
Yeah, and the concern with that is, you know, if it didn't impact, you know, the search functionality, it may not be. And again, these are issues that exist now, right? I mean, if somebody registers before, it's how does same day impact that? And or is it one of those where then you turn it over for further investigation if it really looks like it wasn't an error? I know this is. I don't know what the silence means.
I think you've given us a lot to think about. But.
Okay. I can't. Yeah, I'm having trouble trying to wrap my mind around what the right answer is.
Yeah. Well,
you
and
know,
the,
so many variables to this.
Well, and the number of times it would happen versus the impact if you change your process for everyone because of how rarely this would happen. And is it one of those where that's something you turn over to the DA, or I don't know?
I just think we still keep with actives and inactives in the poll book and recommend the best practice is to call into a more experienced user to do the research and make a decision on whether or not they're reinstated or they give a provisional.
Yeah, I like that, and I do think there probably needs to be a little flexibility because I know, like, some of the smaller counties, if they have one voter service center, their experienced individual is likely the one sitting there that would do the research anyway. So they may not need to call anywhere.
Right.
I think that, big counties, depending on what they do, I mean, I know what we've done previously with our early voting sites is we actually have a voter registration specialist who is that experienced person at a lot of the sites, and they might be able to handle it depending on their experience. So there might be different circumstances. So I think it would probably be best to have some sort of flexibility in if it's calling in or it's maybe the experienced individual actually sitting there to deal with it.
Yeah, and I actually just realized something. So when you do voter search, you may not find them, but when you go to register them as a new registrant, you know how it pulls up possible matches? That pulls up canceled as well, right?
It does in the voter registration
model. So that would be when you would catch them, not necessarily on your first search, but on your second. And then if it pulled up a canceled record that looked like them, that would be what would initiate the call to your more experienced.
That's exactly right.
That's when you would catch it. Okay.
Right.
Okay, then that works. And you don't have – I was just, you know, just concerned with if your first search is – right, and if you – yeah, okay. All right, then, phew, that would work. And then we initiate the process. You call in for a more advanced help, you work with whoever has the more experience with it and then sort through you know, is it an error? Does it look like the same person? And then, you know, resolve it as we currently do. Phew, that works. Okay. Does that work for everybody else? Did I skip words or on that one? So I think we're good on the cancel. Did I lose you guys?
I think Renee and I were trying to talk at the same time.
Okay. Okay, so I think, is that then the same process? So we have canceled deceased. Wouldn't that be the same? And then if you can't resolve it, right, you would have them vote a provisional. If you couldn't resolve it in a timely manner, you'd have them vote a provisional, and then you could still work on resolving it afterwards. If they insisted, right?
Sounds right.
Because Hava, you have to let them vote, correct? Okay. All right. And then for felon and non-citizen, wouldn't it be the same process? You would just, they would pop up during, when you're in the registration screen as a potential match. If it's them with minimum matching, it looks like it's them, then you would call in. Does it say why they're canceled in that screen? Do you know?
I don't know if it does or not.
Not until you select the voter, if I remember correctly, and you pull that voter up in the voter record, then it'll say canceled and the reason.
So you select it, and then when you're about to combine them, it would say that, right? It would give you that message?
Right. You select it, and basically, yeah, you can see down at the bottom, canceled and the reason. I'm pretty sure it does not show on the key line after you do the key line search.
Okay, so that's probably something we want to, just double check and look into as far as a process goes, right?
Now, on the non-citizen, I'm curious. If they're marked canceled non-citizen, they would have had to have done that themselves, right?
I believe so.
Well, so they could have marked non-citizen on the form, and I think our instructions currently are to process the form and mark them canceled, not a citizen, and then if they then get citizenship and come in, then they might be marking, yes, I'm a citizen now.
But we're still completely just working off an oath where they're signing that they are now a citizen. There's no requirement for them to show us naturalization papers or anything.
No, it seems to me it'd be what's put on the form.
Meeting the registration requirements.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I was clear.
And would you guys recommend for your staff, would you have them call in about that to someone more experienced? Or would you take that now they're a citizen?
I don't think it changes, because if they're signed an oath, now they're a citizen. We would have the same criteria whether they call to the main office or not.
Right. My sense, I agree with you, Sheila. I don't think there's anything, you wouldn't need to do any further research because you have all of it right in front of you.
Yeah, I think I agree, and I think it's the same for individuals that maybe weren't 18 when they filled out a form originally as well. So it's the same process.
Say more about that, Amber.
So if they were previously, like when they filled out the form and they weren't 18 at the time, and now they're standing in front of you saying, well, now I'm 18, they might need to be activated or whatever. It's the same, it's based on the oath and what they provide on the form. There's no, and obviously their date of birth in that instance, but it's still all based on what they provide on the form.
Yes. Oh, like maybe they made an error and the date hasn't come or something? Because I thought SCORE automatically registered those when they turned 18 based on their date of birth and the actual date. Is that?
Yeah, it should, as long as the date of birth is correct.
Right. So if there was a data entry error or something, well, I guess that's the same with any of them, right? If we entered the wrong year or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hillary?
Mm-hmm.
I just did a search, I just tried to register a deceased voter.
Mm-hmm.
And the duplicate voter window that comes up only shows that they're canceled. You have to select the record to find out why.
And when you select the record, then it comes up and says why they were canceled, right?
Or you
look at the whole record.
Correct. You get the reinstate, re-register, or close screen first, but you can kind of see the reason behind that screen.
So you have to merge it first, and then you can see the record? Is that what you're saying?
You have to either click reinstate, re-register, or cancel. And then when I hit cancel, then I get the CDPHE verification screen that comes up warning me that this voter is deceased. So right there, you can check the last four of the socials, the date of birth, and the full name. So your judges will see this if they actually select that record.
Okay. It would be useful, someone with a lot more experience than me would take a stab at writing up like how you would have your judges go through that process.
Okay.
Like even with screenshots would be great, because I think this will be one of the questions that it's one of those areas that's new, so how we're addressing it I think could be really helpful. Renee, is that something that you might have time for? I mean,
yeah,
we kind of need to do it for our counties anyway, but.
Yeah, I think I could do that.
Okay, that'd be great. And then, so we won't shoot for this Monday's, but let's review it, but maybe for the following Monday's commission meeting to present it. And then do a little review in the week ahead.
Okay.
That would be great. So why don't you take a look at it and then just let me know, and then we can send it to the committee to take a peek at, and then that way we could get it, through email, get it ready.
Okay.
For when we present. Does that work for others on the phone? And then whoever can comment on it would be great. Okay. So would that be the same for felon? So for deceased and felon, it would be the same process. Will it say that it's canceled because they're a felon as well, or do we know?
I believe so, but I will find one and try and re-register them, and I'll let you know for sure.
Okay, that'd be great. And then what we're saying for non-citizen, or if they're showing up as not 18, we would just have the person who's doing registration in the Voter Service Center just go ahead and register them. There's no reason to call in or anything like that. Is that correct? That's my recap. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I got from it. Hey,
okay.
Renee, there may be something in the score data entry manual regarding these.
I think you're probably right.
I'm pretty sure there's already screenshots and there's already reasons, so you might be able to just steal and pillage.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I will do that.
I'm not at my desk, so I can't find all my stuff.
That's great. Hey, Cynthia, would you mind being a resource if Renee needs to shoot anything by ahead of time?
Of course I will. Renee, I'm happy to.
Okay,
you
thank
Gurus
you.
Are amazing.
You're welcome.
Great. So I think we've covered the cancel status. Anybody have any other input on that or questions? And then we'll see it in writing and then decide if we covered it. Okay. So recap is we would, when these situations come up for deceased or felon, they call into a supervisor, research if it can be resolved, then reinstate them. If it can't be resolved, then they vote provisional. That's the short version. All right. Then if they're canceled and it's, they either withdrew themselves or, they haven't voted in a long time, they would just be reinstated. Or it would just be, the record would be combined. That's the question I have. Is it a reinstatement, or do you let the system just function as it functions?
Well, I think it's really a reinstatement, because you're not combining, like voter merge at that point. You're just entering into the key line and bringing up a record, and then you just choose that canceled one, and then
right.
The option is state.
And is this something that we need to look at? Oh, maybe not, because... what it makes me think of is in statute, is this a place we might need to look at cleanup? because it talks about what it takes to reinstate. Oh, but it might be after the voter registration cutoff date, and since there is no voter registration cutoff date, I think it should be fine. So maybe it just needs to be removed, that reinstatement process. Because there is something in there about, you know, after 6 years, if you can prove that you haven't moved in 6 years, but that was when there was a voter registration cutoff. Does that make sense, or do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, good. Making sure I'm saying all my words out loud today.
So it never did clarify, like, what proof it is that they haven't moved in 6 years. That doesn't, it was kind of tough to administer, actually.
It was. And now with this, it's, yeah, my guess is it probably, that section probably in our cleanup could just come out.
I agree.
And then, Michael, do you think that maybe there's something needs, is there something in rule around it? Or should there be something in rule for, not this version, but maybe the next one? Or Amber, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think if, I think from a clarifying perspective, it might be useful, or at least, at the very least, a policy document, perhaps.
Okay. Then maybe that's where what we can build from what we're creating, and then obviously shoot it by with you guys, Michael, and see what else might need to be added. Oh, that's right. Michael said he had to jump off. I'm sorry. I forgot. Keep talking to him as if he's still on the phone. He's not. Okay. Which is kind of unfortunate because our next subject up is – so I think we're good on canceled. Everybody agree with that? We're ready to move on to ID? Hearing no objections, we're moving on. So we talked about – one scenario is that there's no ID, but you want to take a mail ballot with you and include ID with your mail ballot packet. Where are we at with, is that, everybody still in alignment with that? Is that something, I know we had talked to them about, and I didn't see, I know we'd been talking with Michael. He was going to check with the SOS and see where they what they thought on that. Because the converse of that was to make it clear that if you were getting a replacement ballot, that was in-person voting, right? That you had to show ID to get your replacement ballot.
The front end of that transaction is in-person, therefore requires an ID.
Right. So then you – so we were trying to have it both ways, right? For a replacement, we were counting replacement as in person, which then that makes me think I don't think we can do both of these at the same time. The other thing we were trying to create was a process for someone, if they registered by mail or they registered online, right, and they didn't have ID, although online you kind of have to because in order to use the system, but if they registered for the first time by mail, they don't have to include ID at the time they're registering, but they do have to include ID at the time they're voting. And I know one of the things we discussed last time was if someone comes in and they don't have ID and they're a new registrant, can we register them as being ID required, issue them a ballot, and then in order for them to vote that ballot, they have to include ID?
Hillary, that's what I gathered from the new rules.
What that is?
That they put something in there, and I'm sorry, I don't have my rules in front of me.
I don't have it in front of me either, and they're all a blur.
Yeah, it's like on the first, it's like on page 3 or 4, I think, at the bottom it says when registering for the first time, if the driver's license or SSN is not verifiable, then the voter must provide ID at the time of registering, at the time of voting, or at the time of returning their mail ballot. And that's in the new proposed rules.
Yeah, and on those proposed rules, I know ESRC submitted comments as to what is verifiable.
Mm-hmm.
There were some issues there, so I'm assuming there might be some clarification on some of that.
Yeah. But, you know, what's interesting is I don't, and Amber, help me out on this, but I don't remember seeing anything about if they come in to the VSPC to pick up a ballot and take home, anything about a form or ID or the process or anything?
I know the form was taken out.
Right.
In statute, because I think that used to have to be in statute, because the thought was that them signing their ballot is them getting the replacement.
Right. But I just thought that was interesting. It's not even addressed.
And again, so we're, the bigger conversation is about provisionals, but one of them is if they have no ID, but it also is the exceptions, right? So we're kind of doing both at the same time.
Right.
Like what,
right.
What and they, when, right?
Yeah.
If they, so let's say it's election day and it's, you know, do you issue them a, you know, early in the day, do you issue them a ballot and have it be ID required, right? Can they, it sounds like with the new rule that they could take their ballot and then if they included ID when they voted that ballot, you would count it.
What I'm understanding.
Of course, if it's, you know, 6:45, that's a little slim. Then would you rather have them vote provisional? I would probably change my judges after 6. I don't even know if 6 is the cutoff, right? At some point, wouldn't you train them to start issuing provisional ballots because then you send them the letter and they can still do the ID, right?
But can we do that?
I don't know. Yeah, we're having the conversation.
Yeah.
Do we want to suggest an additional rule to cover the?
What would you say that rule would be, Sheila?
Just that if they came in without ID and were not previously. Well, no, it doesn't matter if they were previously registered or not. Because we're going to treat them as in-person voters. We're going to ask them to show us ID. If they want to carry out their mail ballot and they don't have ID on them, we're going to mark the ballot ID required.
And their registration ID required. But they're registering in person, so I don't know if we have actually...
Well, you're going to have both.
Statutory
you're going to have
authority.
All registered who don't happen to have their ID on them, and then new registrants also. Is it different or is it the same, whether they're previously registered or not?
Yeah, good question.
Would we just require them to vote a provisional on election day if they show up to the polls without ID?
I don't know that we can force them to do in-person voting because they have the option to do mail ballot, and they do have enough time to take it out and then bring it back. Wasn't one of the discussions that we couldn't force in-person voting on election day?
Yeah, I don't think we have the authority. I think if somebody wants a mail ballot, they can get a mail ballot. I think the question is what authority do we have around ID with them picking up a mail ballot in person? Because mailing them a ballot kind of verifies the address that they're at as well.
I suppose, Hillary, you still have that option to mark them ID required if that ballot, no matter when it was picked up, comes back without ID. You still are going to mail them a letter and allow them 8 days after the election to cure their ID deficiency before you can count that ballot. So I think it falls under the same thing as provisional, but they're voting regular ballot.
Could we in the rule say if they were already registered and just didn't happen to have ID on them that day, that we just mark the ballot ID required? But if they're a brand new registrant and they didn't bring ID, the record and the ballot get marked ID required.
I think that we I don't know if we have the legal authority to require an ID in that for a replacement for somebody who's already registered.
But how do we know that they are them? Because we are not mailing it to their address.
Because of their signature when they sign it.
Verification.
Their signature still has to match.
No, good point. I forgot about the most secure piece of the whole system.
Exactly. Yeah.
Drinking too hard.
Yeah. So I think that takes care of even someone picking up a replacement without ID, right?
Uh-huh.
But I know some of you guys didn't like that and have currently require ID to pick up a replacement. So if some of you would speak up and help us think through this, that would be great. Because I'm fine with just relying on the signature as far as a replacement ballot goes. We haven't had an issue where somebody's like, I didn't ask for a replacement. You're also still counting the first ballot back.
Right. And so
you're right.
You're right, and I think it's dependent on whether the SOS is going to make us have them fill out a form or not. I mean, that's my concern. If they're not going to make us fill out a form, then fine. We're checking the signature that's on file.
Yep. Well, that got taken out of – filling out a form was in statute, and it got removed.
Right. And, see, that's what I'm trying to decide is who's filling out the form at the Voter Service Center. That's where I'm kind of trying to wrap my brain around it.
Mm.
You know, because our voters don't know. They come in and they're like, well, yeah, I just didn't get in the mail. Well, we don't know if they're registered. We don't know really what their status is.
Is it the right address? I mean, I would still have them fill. I think they still – everybody starts with the form.
Right.
Because then you're also verifying that it's the correct address, right? Because
right.
if you're going to do a replacement, you pop up their record. You go, hey, your address on here doesn't match. Have you moved? Yes. Oh, okay. You know, take care
right.
of it.
And then at that point, they're signing a form, but
right.
do they have ID or don't have ID? You know, so it's
I don't
kind
think
of
they have
that.
To have ID. For a replacement, I don't think they do. Or an address change, right?
But if they have an address change,
they don't have to have ID.
How do
right?
we know it's that person? And now we're scanning in a form with a signature. You know, that's kind of what I've been trying to work through all this thing in my mind, and that's where I'm having trouble.
Well, that's not a new issue, though. Well, it may be because you guys previously required ID if they were getting a replacement.
Well, no,
right?
if you change your address, if you update your information and score, you have to have a signature on file. Granted, you may not have to have ID with it, but...
You mean you have to sign the form?
But
right.
Well, unless you do it online.
Yeah.
Right.
Unless you do it online or unless it happens through an NCOA, then we wouldn't have a signature, a recent
right.
signature.
So I know we've taken way more than 25 minutes, but it kind of feels like maybe we should hang here for a little bit and keep see if we can't wrap up this exception part. So what do we have a recommendation as a best practice as a business practice?
I don't know. I think we just need to cover the best practice, how to handle it when they're registering for the first time and receiving a mail ballot.
Well, and where it really started was issuing a provisional, right? Because that's what
right.
we're also going to get to is, and then at what point do you issue them a provisional because of no ID?
But can we force them to take a provisional if they want a mail ballot, though?
Yeah, so all right, so let's start with the easy. It's really clear. If they want to vote in person and they don't have ID and they want to vote then and there, they'd vote provisional. That one's easy, right?
Correct.
Clear.
Okay. We'll come at it from the other side. All right, then what about a mail ballot?
I think for a mail ballot, you would issue them a mail ballot, make them ID required, label the envelope ID required, and you would treat them as provisional if they don't provide the ID.
So what do you mean you would treat them as provisional if they don't? Oh, you mean if they didn't mail an ID with their ballot?
Yes.
Right on.
Send them a letter after the election or 2 days or whatever.
Great. I agree with that. I think that's the best method. And then then you have to decide, like, if somebody is willing to do that, I mean, either way, they're still going to, you know, if they vote provisional, they're still going to get something saying you didn't provide ID.
Correct.
So, or if we can verify them some other way.
Can
the
I,
usual ways we go through ID issues with voters. So then, yep, go ahead.
I'm sorry, can I ask a clarifying question on that?
Mm-hmm. You bet.
Are we talking new voter or existing voters?
I wrote down new voter.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure I was understanding.
Yeah. And then I was going to move on to the existing voter, which I think is where we've gotten squishier on it.
Thank you.
So a new voter, which if you're doing that for a new voter, and then you have a current voter who comes in who needs a replacement because they've – and they don't have ID, right? And there's a question as to whether we can actually require them to show us ID. I know
– And I think the agreement was we rely on the signature in that scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, then you issue it and you rely on the signature. So then they're going to sign a form, right, showing they've changed their address, or it's online, which is different anyway because you'd be issuing those through your other mail your regular process. You wouldn't be issuing those from a service center. But at a service center, they'll sign a form. So if you scan that form in before you process that ballot by mail, won't it pull the signature from the form you signed? They just signed? Or do you check signature, if they're getting a replacement, do you check the signature on their form with the signature you have on file?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that we have that.
I know we don't, but so the concern is if you, well, I guess then you'd have to investigate, right? If someone was trying to be fraudulent, right, and they asked for a replacement ballot for somebody else who was registered and were relying on signature, if you use, like, some people won't scan those forms in until after the election, and so then you're going back to the old form, and that works. Especially
I see what you're
maybe
right?
We make that part of our business practices is we don't scan the form in right away.
For replacements.
Yeah. That might be a good idea.
I think that's what you do, because then you would automatically have the old signature.
Right.
I don't think we would have the ability to scan forms in like a voter service center anyway. I think those documents would be brought back to the office to do after election.
Yeah, for some it might be for all, right?
Right.
And for others who, because we actually, we have scanners, so when it is slower, that's one of the things they do.
Okay.
Is scan and registration forms. But I think you keep the ones for replacement separate. And then that way it will pull, and again, we're a larger but not the largest, so I'd be curious, Amber, what you think of that, because you want it to, if we're going to rely on signature for replacement, you want it to pull an existing signature, not the one they're signing at the time they're getting the replacement.
Yeah, we currently don't have scanners at the service centers, but what we normally do is we have the forms come back in every day from
mm-hmm.
each site, and then the first task in that following morning for our voter registration team is to scan in and attach those as part of our auditing process.
Right.
So
right.
Likely by the time the mail ballot gets into signature verification, it's already there.
Have you previously required ID to pick up a replacement in person?
Not unless they're picking up something for somebody else and they have to provide an affidavit.
So do you think that's, I know others have required a form and ID. We haven't required ID before. And sometimes the form would be scanned in and sometimes it wouldn't from our side because it just depended on how busy we were. So do we think so what's being recommended is that for replacements, you don't scan those forms in until after the election.
I agree.
Well, yeah, and more I'm trying to get Amber's sense just because of volume.
Okay.
Right? what that does to her body after. And it still may be a recommendation, and it still may be something. I just wanted to explore it from your side, Amber.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would probably prefer, I guess I'd like the flexibility to be able to do it daily if that's what we can do, kind of thing.
So then how do you make sure you haven't gotten, do you have concerns about, you know, if somebody is getting a replacement ballot for that's not theirs?
So I mean, when we've traditionally scanned the forms, I mean, we do signature verification on mail ballots, obviously, but we also do take a look at previous signatures on documents when things are being scanned in. So if there is a question, we sort of catch it normally during that time period. So I think, I mean, I guess I don't really feel strongly either way, but it does seem like counties would want the flexibility to scan it in, like you said, during downtime or daily or after, with probably a recommended best practice of don't just attach it. You should look at previous documents as well to make sure it's not just a random, you know, signature.
Right. I think that's it. You do one or the other. The question I have, though, is do we have any legal – so what's your process if it doesn't look like it's the same person? If there is a signature discrepancy, how do you guys handle that? In registration, not with – you know what I mean? Like you're scanning in the form, you pull up the previous records, and it doesn't look like it's the same signature. What do you guys do with that?
Well, so it's fairly rare. I mean, this is a rare occurrence, but if there is some sort of question, they'll look back at previous documents, and then if they feel that it's, you know, an issue, then we would likely send another correspondence to the voter saying that we, you know, found it and that we need additional information. So that's similar to how we handle, you know, signature discrepancies or other trouble letters if they don't.
Would you make them incomplete then?
I don't think they'd need to be incomplete if they're already duly registered, but I think it's one of those circumstances where if there is a question, which I anticipate this would be a rare occurrence, and it has been a rare occurrence, then we would say, you know, can we get additional information from you or whatever.
And then, so would you then not attach that new signature? And because how do you handle it if the ballot's getting processed in the middle of this transaction?
Well, I think if the ballot's getting processed, then it would likely be a signature discrepancy letter.
But only if you didn't scan in, right? If the ballot matches the new signature, the new signature doesn't match any of the old, then that seems to be an issue.
Yeah, so I would say then we would send a signature discrepancy letter based on the ballot as well as the form, if the form was already in there. If the form wasn't in there, then it would show up as a discrepancy anyway.
Right, and how do you make it flag so that it catches that it's a because if you scan in the new form and you don't do any other changes, it's an active or inactive record during signature verification, they're just going to pull up that signature. No one would know to look deeper when that ballot came back.
Yeah, unless it was unless they had already flagged it in, you know, while they were scanning, if they had done that first. So I mean, I think it's
how do you flag it? I guess is the question then.
Well, if we see that in our process, if we would see that in the Canvas sort of audit process that we do daily, we go to attach it and it doesn't match.
Mm-hmm.
We would then flag that voter in signature verification to pull it out and look at it. That's how we would do that. We haven't had to do that.
Yeah.
Previously, but if that occurred, that's how we would handle it. We would flag it before that started, or if we didn't scan it and waited till after the election, like you mentioned, then it would be caught in the signature discrepancy process for mail ballots. So, I mean, that probably is the easiest way to flag it for everybody.
Is to just not scan the new. If there's a question about the new form, to just not scan it, send out a correspondence, and then if the ballot comes in, it would come up as signature. It would either match, and you'd be like, "Oh, I guess it really was the voter," or it wouldn't match, and then you'd send a letter.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's you know, I think if that would probably be the easiest.
Yeah.
for everybody, if that's what we're trying to do, is, you know, come up with something that's consistent, that would make sense.
And I guess the recommendation is this or a process that achieves the same outcome. So if you guys have your own process, I think that's fine.
Yeah, but as long as folks are achieving that outcome, that seems. And I actually have to jump off.
Okay.
I have to go to City Council. So.
All right.
Enjoy the rest of your call.
Excellent. I'm pretty sure we're just going to get through the rest of Voter Service Center, and then we'll add these other items to our next meeting.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Okay. So I think then the recommendation from our group would be either you don't scan the forms till after the election, and then if there's a signature discrepancy, it would naturally come up in the signature verifying process, or if you do scan the forms, you do signature comparison. If the signature appears to not match the previous signatures, then you wouldn't scan the form in, and it would achieve the same thing. Everybody good with that? And, of course, we'll see it in writing.
Yep.
Okay, good. Like, is anybody left on the phone? Okay.
I agree.
All right. And the rest of you, if anyone else have any other comments on the ID part? Okay, so I'm going to recap. In person, want to insist on voting, no ID, provisional. New voter, willing to take a mail ballot, mark them ID required. They provide ID with their ballot or whatever the other process is if they don't. Replacement, we're going to rely on the signature and not a separate form. So they'll fill out a form at the center. Either we don't scan those forms till afterwards, and therefore it would use an existing signature to match with the ballot, or if we do scan them, then you do a signature verification at that time. And if it doesn't look like the signature matches, then you just don't scan that form in or attach that new form to the record. Is that what everybody else heard?
Sounds right to me.
Excellent. Okay, so now we have the next step. Renee, you're going to work on how we handle the canceled. Cynthia, do you and I want to work on the ID part of it, flowchart-wise?
I would love to, except for the fact that I'm probably going to be working 90 hours this next week. I've got a petition and NCOA to do, and we're short in staff, so I'm taking the lead. I would love to help, but I just don't see how I can. I'm sorry.
Okay. No worries. That's kind of the challenge with it.
My petition's due on Friday, next Friday, so I'm frantic.
Yeah, petitions are huge. So, okay, let me see what draft I can put together. I don't know if we can get a draft, maybe. Does anybody else have any resources that could help refine it? And we don't have to do it live. It could be through email, and it doesn't have to be you. If anybody has any staff, we'll be popping it into I don't know if we use a flow chart or just a chart on it.
I would. The more I thought
probably
about it,
when
I was trying to work
chart.
Chart. Just a chart.
I think it's going to be an exception chart, right? That'll come to a conclusion, right? Here's the scenario, and here's what they end up with. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, I'll draft a chart if you guys can, either through you or your staff, have others look it over.
I'd be happy.
Yeah. Agree to that?
Yes, thank you.
I think I heard Rudy chiming in. You guys have some bandwidth to look at it?
I don't have any bandwidth either.
I know. That's the problem. So, and it's stuff we have to answer for our own counties is the other part of it. So what do we want to suggest we do? Because I think this is going to be an ongoing issue. If we want processes and programming to align with what we actually do, then how do we get either that or the things, the decisions are going to be made for us, and that's challenging.
Yeah, we don't want that. MESA can help try to work on the meat of it, and then hopefully the other members can at just at least take a peek.
Yeah, I'm happy to review. Happy to review a draft and work on it from there. I just have 10,000 signatures to verify.
Yeah. No, and this is our dilemma. This is where we're at, and we're going to have, I know everybody, we're heading into the season. Like, I'm sure many of us are already working more than our regularly hours, whatever those actually are. So I think, and more mass, like this one, I think we can get through. Like, I'll pop it into a chart and we'll take a look at it. We have more processes and things coming up, and maybe it's just, I don't know, is it just doing some triage of what do we need to do now? Because the other concern that's out there is what programming is going to be looked at between now and after the election, and what do we need to weigh in on the front end that's going to impact next year's election? That's the other concern I have. And then if this group doesn't have the bandwidth, how do we get bandwidth? Where do we go for bandwidth?
I think we have to bridge that next year.
I think so, but so there is probably a long-term strategy that we're going to need for this group, because the commission's going to be wanting more information from us, and maybe that's something we'll just have to push back on. And that's one of the concerns. Or is that something maybe we just take up to the association?
Yeah, we'll have to think on that a little bit, how to ensure that we have the bandwidth to handle their demands.
Because they're going to need information to make decisions. And if it's not this group or people on this, and again, it's circumstantial, but it's, in some ways it's only going to get more so as we move to the election. And the bigger, the question I have is what decisions about business practices are going to be developed to between now and the end of the year when we have our heads down in the election? And then what's the impact of that?
Hillary, do you think that they'll let up a little bit, as we hit busy seasons? Obviously, like right now, a little bit busy with this petition and the
mm-hmm,
NCOA.
Mm-hmm.
But again, then after that, in 2 weeks, I'm back to being available again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, we each, I think, within our offices hit our highs and lows. And then obviously when election season actually hits, there is going to have to be a little bit,
yeah,
I think, more accommodation from the commission. Is that
absolutely
something?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I'm always here to help as much as I can, so.
Yeah, I absolutely get that. I don't want anyone to take that I know there's not that willingness. It's just also
right,
the willingness in reality. And
right,
how do we plan and communicate what to the commission? So there's what the commission wants is one piece. And the two items they currently have is one is they'd like to see how, some information and education on how ballots are processed once they come in by mail. And I know some counties may have stuff, so that's probably, they don't need that tomorrow, but they'll need it sooner than later. So that might be something in the next, when people have a little more availability, that might be the next item up after we get through the exception, the voter services center processing stuff. They also want a security review of how do we know, what do we do to make sure counties have proper security at their voter service centers now? What do we do during early voting? Those are the two items that they want some information on.
Okay.
So that's. I'm just going to point out the whole picture. That's one. The other is we're going to have a score update at the end of the year. We don't know what's going to be in it. We don't know. One of the things that came out of the needs assessment was to set the business practice first and then do the program. And if it's not this group that does that, how does that happen? So that's the picture for me between now and the end of the year. I mean, there may be a few more items from the commission, but I think there's ways to, you know, push back or see if it's reasonable, that kind of stuff. Or see what we already have that exists, right?
Right. Hillary, are they still planning on meeting weekly, or are they going to start slowing down a little bit? Do you know?
No, they're still going to meet weekly.
They're going to meet weekly. Okay.
Yeah. And our group is going to be a regular agenda item, meaning we can report anything we need to. I'm going to let them know we meet every other week. We still may have stuff in the interim, but, you know, one of our reports could be we have no update for this meeting. I mean, that's not a big deal. But we have the opportunity, should there be anything we think that the commission needs to know about as well.
Okay. Well, and Hillary, this is Sheila, and if I could bring this up at this point, because something came during the time that we were meeting with Hillary, Rudy, Judd, and Suzanne last week, and that was that, like, one of the reasons they wanted to move away from using the business practice meeting on best practices for the NCOA file, you know, they put that out in the weekend brief that they were looking for counties to participate instead of just bringing it to our group.
Yeah.
And so when I asked about that, the reasoning was is that reportedly when there are changes made or suggestions from our group as the business practices committee, we're not thinking of all size counties, and so it's then Hillary Rudy gets called saying, well, that just won't work for our county. There's no way that process works. And so it just made me think that so that other counties know that this is coming from us, maybe we need to be a little bit more communicative on that end so that they realize that it's the business practices group that came up with this, whatever it is. And this is what we're suggesting, and please communicate with us if you have any red flags on the front end before it gets any further down the road. It takes more time for that, though. I don't know. I just thought I'd bring it up as a topic of discussion because that was something that was really bothering me.
Yeah, and that's because it is something that we, I mean, with the membership, that's what we really try to take into account. Like the process we just worked through, right? We looked through, worked through for what are the options for a small versus a large county.
Yeah.
And NCOA is probably the exception because really we were just trying to get the data right first.
Sheila, sorry to have interrupted. I was just going to say maybe they should be invited if they have strong opinions on it, maybe they should be invited to participate.
Is that what you mean by the communicating, letting more counties know? Do we send out drafts?
No, I don't think that. I think we just, when we have something set, we send it out and say the business practices group recommends the following course of action or best practice. Because I think if the counties knew that it was coming from us and not state, they might think about it a little bit differently. Hillary Rudy told me was that they call it yelling at them that when there's a change in score or something, you know, about that just will not work. But if they would talk to another clerk of the same size county business practices group, you know, maybe they'd take a little bit of a softer approach to about what their business practice is rather than how it affected them once the change was made. I don't know. I'm not really sure where to go with that.
Well, and who and what's the scope and scale on it, too. But it's definitely something, right? It's like that because that's not the intent either.
No, and we don't have time to include more people in the discussion or send out drafts back and forth.
Yeah. And I do know that that's one of the things the commission does want to give opportunity for others to comment on it. I think it's also one of the challenges. I don't know.
Anyways, continue on with it, Paul, because I don't want to spend too much time on this. I just wanted to bring it up so that people had it in their heads that, you know, probably also need to do a better job of communicating with our members.
I think that's a great reminder. Okay. Well, let's – and then what that makes me think is, do we need a couple weeks, do we need to meet for longer to – kind of regroup on some of this, because we didn't get obviously very far on our agenda this week. But it was a big one. It was important. All right. The only last
thing.
Yeah, let's take a look at that, and Sheila, maybe I'll talk with you a bit more, see what your thoughts are offline, and then send it to the group and talk about it. Because some of it's process, right? While it has some leftover, it's also some new, there's some new roles, and so how do we make sure we can fulfill those? One quick item with the 2 minutes we have left is, the commission aligned to replacing our membership the way that it was appointed for the SCORE Advisory Board, with the SOS having the two members that they have and then the rest being appointed by the Clerks Association. So Sheila and I in our spare time are going to get that out to the membership. If you guys know somebody who should replace Josh or you have thoughts on that, let us know.
And Hillary, I just sent you that this morning. I'm really sorry for dropping the ball.
Oh no, that wasn't my comment was more like, oh yes, and as we talk about more on there's always just so much more was really what that comment was about. So
well, I told you I was gonna send you a draft last week and I totally spaced
it.
Great.
No worries. So all right. So I'll do some recapping this weekend on what we talked about, and it'll look like the chart, and then if you guys can take a look. Renee, if you let me know when you think you'll have something to send around, or just send it to the group when it's ready, that would be great. It'd be great if we could get some stuff finalized by the end of next week, and then I can show them at least where we're headed at the commission meeting, not this Monday, but a week from Monday.
Sounds good.
Okay. And thanks, you guys. And again, I mean, I really do appreciate all of your time, and it's that challenge, right? There's more to be done than there appears to be time for.
Exactly.
All right. Any other comments for the good of the group or that you need to get off? Comment to the group? All right. Well, thank you all for making the time, and we'll update with more to come.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.